As usual, even though the music says two guys gaming, this is one guy reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. Hello and welcome. I'm Sean, Noob of All Trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to Dragons of Destiny, the third and final book in the latest Dragonlance trilogy by Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. It's taken me less than 3 months to get to this episode, episode three, after it took 3 months in between episode one and episode two. Hopefully I'll get episode four out before break ends, and then I'll have to get episode five and six up at some point too, so that I can move on to Frankenstein, which is what I'm doing in January. I updated the schedule in the show notes. You can take a look there. In this episode, as I always do, I will give a summary of the chapters 17 through 22, and then I will give my thoughts on those chapters. Chapter 17. The house falls into an unsteady quiet. Goldmoon and Riverwind fall back asleep after recovering the staff from Tasselhoff. Storm sleeps peacefully. Flint said he would go sleep in one of the storage sheds to avoid more assault at the hands of Taz. Taz falls asleep with a blanket he found in the house. It actually turns out to be a flour sack, if I don't mention that later on. Raistlin offers to take first watch, but Tanis wishes to speak to him. He tells the story of Chaos Time and the Lost War. Astinus sent Cairn and Destina back with the gem to right time and banish Tachesis. Tanis is merely a diversion in this time. He explains that part of the plan. While talking, the Dragonlances come up. Tanis believes the trip to retrieve them is futile, hundreds of miles through land controlled by Tachesis. Raistlin intrigues him even more with a mention of the Dragon Orb there. Still, how do we get there? My traveling spell. How did you learn that? The evil wizard? Vestandantilus? No. He is no longer with me. I came by the spell from Aegeus. I will memorize that spell and others. You should get some sleep. I cannot. I will speak with Lorana. Raistlin smiles. I need more information on the tower, if you say so. Chapter 18. Bakaris sits in his hiding spot. Hungry, tired, and feeling trapped, he nods off intermittently. If he falls asleep, he will snore and then be discovered. Then he hears Tanis say that he wants to talk to Lorana. That inspires him to try to get out and get the jump on Tanis. When he exits the cellar, he notices that it is overcast and raining. He prays to Tachesis to guide him. She ignores that prayer. Add wet and cold to his list of discomfort. He eventually realizes that the storm can also provide him with some cover, too. If I can't kill him, I can at least report back to Kitiara. He makes a run for it, receiving a warning shot from the elves. Instead, he runs even faster, cursing the storm. It parts, and he finds his way back to the camp. He has to see Kit. The Bozaks deny him until he tells them that he has info that she wants about Tanis. He tells her about that, the elves and the Copper Dragon. She doesn't believe him. He tells her more. He gets in a dig about Tanis and Lorana, then also Raistlin and Caramon as traitors. She's furious, but insists that he continue. He talks about the plan to take on Tachesis' army. She again brands him a liar. He adds more context about the Dragonlances and Dragon Orb. She scoffs. The distance. Raistlin can travel magically. Well, you aren't smart enough to make all of this up. Okay, keep this info to yourself for now. Don't tell anyone else. After he leaves, Bakaris sees Caramon at the mess tent. He threatens him. Caramon asks for proof. Bakaris can't say, but he ensures that the proof is there. Then he takes some food and slinks back to his tent for murderous intent. Chapter 19. After Bakaris leaves, Kit daydreams about revenge on Tanis. She then decides that she needs advice. She goes to the lake that was once a staple of life in the town. Now nobody travels there because of the blue dragon living there. She identifies herself to protect against attack. The dragon tells her to simply go away. He just ate. She insists. Sky, the dragon, relents. After some discussion of her relationships, she gets down to business. This intrigues Sky, and he asks her to elaborate. She asks if he knows about the Dragonlances. He then explains the history of the Dragonlances and how dangerous they are to his kind. But what about the other artifact? She mentions the Dragon Orb. He again reiterates how dangerous it is and that it heralds the gods' returns. They scheme together a way to retrieve the Dragonlances and Orb. They can use them to increase her favor with the Dark Queen. They argue about how to travel, and she finally convinces him to use magic. Since he's a dragon, he wants to fly. Because dragons fly, he says. Conversation ends with a discussion about the Grey Gem. As she leaves, she ponders Karaman's fate. Chapter 20. Someone wakes Raistlin. Destina. She and Karen want to travel while everyone sleeps. Raistlin calms down and lets the spell he wanted to cast melt away from his mind. When he looks at the Grey Gem, it seems to wink at him. Destina does want to say goodbye to Taz. If you must, but you have to hurry. Taz wants to come with them. He needs to stay to help them look for something. Well, I'm good at that. And I can't be in two places at once, right? Yes, thank the gods, Raistlin says. Okay. She thanks Taz, and they say their goodbyes. He asks them to say hi to everyone they know back then. Raistlin pulls him away. They discuss some of the particulars about the trip. Raistlin also goes over some of the goings-on from the previous trip. They thank him, prepare the device, and go. Gaz will either save them or doom them. Raistlin goes to bathe in a nearby creek. When he returns, he sees Tanis. The half-elf has breakfast from the elves. He tells Tanis that Destina and Karen left. They need to get going and get the dragon lances and orb. While eating breakfast, they fill Sturm in on the happenings. They again discuss the plan to get to the tower. What about the dragon? We'll port right into the tower. He'll never know we're there. And the undead? Probably hearsay. Okay, when do we leave? After I study the spell, Lorana enters. We have trouble. Chapter 21. Bugbears! Taz shouts. No, they saw Bakaris near the house. He must have gone back to the High Lord. Raistlin, angry, recounts his thoughts of vermin. He was right in one way. They talk about plans. Them to the tower. Goldmoon and Riverwind can't come. Lore can't take them to Qualinesti. What about Pax Tharkas? Taz asks. How do you know? The past that isn't the past. Tanis tells them to go scout for bugbears. I thought there weren't any. Well, maybe I made a mistake. Okay, fine. Make up your mind. We could take them to Pax Tharkas. The people overthrew the High Lord, but their leader is sick and dying. Saber comes to talk to Goldmoon and Riverwind. He promises them his protection on the way to Pax Tharkas. Taz blabs more about all the people he knows there. The elves are impatient to leave, so they make haste. Raistlin works to prepare the spell. Flint flips his lid at the prospect. Taz tries to talk him down. Raistlin uses the memory of Magius as inspiration. The words still elude him. He needs to concentrate. Needs to make them his own. Needs to honor Magius' memory. Chapter 22. Destina and Karen needed to arrive undetected. They plan to return on the night of the Red Dragon's attack. That seemed like a branch point for chaos time. The Grey Gem caused time to diverge. They needed it to restore the original timeline. Chaos is our hope, as it is our despair. That is the paradox, Raistlin said. They arrived safely, and Karen put the device away. She ruminates on her father, Sturm, and the events that led her on this path. She has done so much harm. She tries to bend the gem to her will, but it burns her at the thought. She feels despair. Karen tries to soothe her. The horns of war announce the attack. The dragon fear overcomes them. They fight through it and make their way to help. They hear Belgrave and go to him. His soldiers, in the grip of dragon fear, attack them. Karen takes care of one, and they continue. They stumble on the dragon, and then Belgrave, Titus, and Tali. She shouts, he hears, but backs off when the Grey Gem warns him. They arrive only to see Belgrave fall to Tali. He makes them promise to take care of the traitor. Destina loses her shit and promises not to let Chaos win. All that matters is ensuring that Huma and Gwyneth win. Stop Tachesis, will you? I know that I love you, and love will win over evil. They tell Sir Reginald their story. He tells them that they came at a bad time. The Dark Queen's army marches. Magus arrives, and they tell him the story of the attack. He shows them to their room and advises them to come up with a better story. She makes conversation, eventually bringing up Tali. Yes, Belgrave thought the same. He told you? Destina asks to go to the temple. She and Karen go over the happenings that led to Chaos Time and the ways they can alter things back. They need to leave the tower without being seen. Finally, they settle on getting the Gnomish Dragonlance to work. With no Taz, Trapspringer gets them to turn it on, and off it goes to fulfill its destiny. They need to avoid changing history too much, but what they need to change. So much that they know that she wishes she didn't know. Knowing the future can be a curse. They decide to stay in the temple. Destina asks what the plan is when they find Tali. Dalimar would simply say kill him. But that might change nothing. Another assassin would show up in his stead. Well, he must have some way to get in unnoticed. Tali becomes a footnote in history, but actually represents a huge thorn in their sides, thanks to chaos. First, my initial thoughts. Have they bitten off more than they can chew? That's my initial thought. A lot happening in this section. Everyone went back to try to alter, parenthetically destroy, chaos time and restore history. Now Destina and Karen have gone back further again to the Third Dragon War to prune that particular anomaly. They already altered chaos time simply by showing up. Plus, the Grey Gem remains the wildest of all wild cards. So how do Weiss and Hickman juggle all of these plot lines into something coherent? They obviously have a plan. Right now, I just can't see how it all comes together, to quote a great philosopher. Remember way back when I said what a dream it would be to write for the Grey Gem? Yeah, I don't envy them anymore. Obviously, it piques my curiosity and makes me want to read more. It also worries me some that things won't make sense. You always run that risk when you meddle with time travel. So far, though, I think they've done a good job with the story. So in spite of that worry, I am confident that Weiss and Hickman will pull it off. I'll smile in wonder and amazement at their masterful storytelling. 20-plus years later, I'll look back fondly on these books. A far cry from where I started the series. World building. Much less of that here. It makes sense because they spent so much time in the previous chapters bringing chaos time to life, both for the new and old fans. Other than explaining any necessary developments, they can simply allow their characters and story to exist in that world now. New characters. Likewise, with so much going on with the plot, no new characters get introduced to the story. Some characters, like those in the past, are new to the book. But if you've been reading the whole series, they aren't entirely new. If somehow you missed either of the first two books, Weiss and Hickman do their cool thing of introducing new quote-unquote characters in the context of the story and plot. Mainly Magius because he's a major character in history. But the other ones as well, like Belgrave and those guys, they introduce them pretty well. Admittedly, slightly less of that. You've had to have read the second book to know the whole story. That's kind of what I was getting at there. So they haven't completely eliminated the quote-unquote homework aspect of it. But they offer some killer author's notes to help you make sense of it all. Character development. Riverwind and Goldmoon got more fleshed out as characters. We see the dynamic of their relationship. It all makes sense why Mashako chose Goldmoon as her conduit. The woman is selfless to a fault. Riverwind, perhaps compensating for that, sometimes comes across as overbearing. But especially in the Terrors of Chaos time, his protective streak benefits them both. Bakaris, too, becomes more than just a convenient foil. His pampered past manifests in several ways. Any minor inconvenience becomes a personal affront, like the rain, for instance. His response, "Why have you forsaken me?" to the Dark Queen. Finally, when Kit doesn't give him the proper respect he thinks that he deserves, he throws a colossal fit. This puts Caramon directly in his sights. Lorana fills in some of her character through her interactions with the others. Her fiery temper, parenthetically for an elf and parenthetical, and slightly less measured decisions show why she loves Tanis. His human side feeds into those aspects of her personality and validate those traits. Perhaps I'm biased, but Raistlin continues to show the most growth and development, other than Tasselhoff, but I think I talked about that either in the last book or earlier in this one. While still bitter because of his frail constitution, he tempers it much better. Some of that is because of his separation from Fist and Dantalus, but I also think that he genuinely understands that he hurt a lot of people, and he wants to atone for that. Also, he sees that those people continue to love him in spite of all that pain and abuse. I figured out early that this could be a redemption arc for Raistlin, and we were right on schedule for that. Pacing. We've reached the part of the story where things are happening fast and furious. They bounce from group to group, and time frame to time frame after only a chapter or two. It's one of the things that reassures me about there being so many threads. They could easily have put some of the characters off for a few chapters or forgotten about them momentarily. Instead, they give us the whole story introduction right now. Bakaris tipped off Kit, the companions must keep Goldmoon safe, and the staff safe as well, and Karen and Destina are in the past trying to make things right there. Even so, none of it feels rushed either. They spend enough time with all the characters and stories to introduce them properly. Like I said, I want to see what happens next in all of these subplots. Plus, how the hell will they pull it all together to make a coherent story? I must say, this has become my favorite part of the books, by far. What I liked least. Didn't you hear me? I said this is my favorite part of the books. But I committed to this format. I could decide not to, but I'm no quitter. So I need to come up with something. This happens every now and then. I usually come up with a compelling case for something. Usually I default to a character. Yes, that's what's happening here. I mean, after all that, it's fairly obvious what I'm going to say. If you listen to the last two episodes and think about the previous books, you can put two and two together. If you weren't expecting a math quiz today, I will stop wording around and just come out and say it. The thing I liked least this time is Bakaris. Remember last time when I said that the corruption of chaos time in Kryn mirrored the real world a little too closely, and that gave me the ick. I learned that my students hate when I use certain slang terms, so I'm using that as negative reinforcement. Yikes. Those two sentences really highlight the old ADHD. Anyway, Bakaris does the same, parenthetically mirror the real world, and parenthetical, but with a positive spin. But you said you liked him the least. What's positive? Well, Bakaris is a spoiled little rich kid who asks his way into some semblance of success. And that's why I can't stand him. Some of you may hear the words rich and success, parenthetically, because our brains are mostly trained to notice the positive, and parenthetical, and come to the lazy conclusion that I'm jealous. That helps you sleep at night. But I promise I'm not. Not of the fictional character, not of the all-too-real human analogs. Who's that? You ask with a name at the ready? I don't normally argue bad faith, but I'm feeling charitable. The fact that you already have a name, and that name may differ from person to person, shows that there are enough of these assholes out there worth hating. So I will not name names. Let's just go with the shorthand. There are no ethical billionaires. No, not even your favorite, who may give a pittance to appear charitable. Maybe move them to the back of the line once they see the blade never tires for blood. Hopefully they'll see the light and redistribute their own wealth. Otherwise, into the chipper. Anyway, knowing that Bakaris will get his eventually makes me giddy. Realizing that some of those who emulate him in the real world might meet the same face brings me much joy. I can't say that will happen for sure. Life sometimes has a way of disappointing us. But my optimist streak thinks that things start to look promising on some fronts. Stay tuned. I hope I'm right. What I liked best. Again, at the point of sounding too positive, parenthetically, I know we're all supposed to be jaded and hate everything, and parenthetical, or a shill. Parenthetically, if we like anything, we must be getting paid. I wish, and parenthetical. I liked it all. I spent the better part of this episode raving about how much I enjoyed reading this section. Are you going to make me choose? Okay, fine. I can probably talk longer about something specific anyway. The glimmer of hope. While sometimes faint, one theme through all of Dragonlance is the power of hope and love. The saying is that evil eats itself, and I agree. Even in the disappointment of real life, the truly evil always cut each other down. Sometimes it takes a few years, but Father Time is undefeated. Maybe I'm living in a utopian bubble, and I will receive a rude wake-up call. Thankfully, that won't happen in the book. Evil sometimes comes out on top, but it's always temporary. After wading through the bleakness of Chaos Time last episode, we had a huge glimmer of hope in the staff's healing. That hope expands this time around. Both Sturm and Destina are alive and well. Destina even traveled back in time to help set things right. The gods offer assistance against the Dark Queen, while there's still a chance to defeat her. That's what some raiders miss when they go dark. They never leave room for the light to return. Now, because Weiss and Hickman did, I have a reason to keep reading. What's next? Speaking of a reason to keep reading, it's time to discuss what's next. I start this section with a recap of what I said last time. Nothing went down with Bakaris. Not in the way that I thought. He escaped and set up for a showdown later. I just underestimated how much of a coward he really is. Sure, he was outnumbered, but I'd rather just call him a bitch ass and move on. Also, like I said, they split the party, but not completely in the way that I thought. Destina and Cairn traveled back to the past to set things back on a better path. Those caught in Chaos Time went to find the Dragonlances, and others went to either Pax Tharkas or Qualinesti. I thought they were going to raise an army, but I suppose that having the Dragonlances in their possession will help with that. So I stick with that as a necessity. Even with the Dragonlances, they will need an army. They don't have a Hulk. The Grey Gem remains dormant. At the very least, the effects cannot yet be seen. It's going to activate at some point. When it does, that gives Destina a chance to exert control over her finally. But that probably happens later in the book. In the next section, I think they find the Dragonlances. Then armed with those weapons, they can more easily raise an army. I'm thinking the humans and dwarves first, then the elves, and finally the dragons. I bet they show up nearly last minute, when almost all hope is gone. Actually, probably Kender first. That was obvious. Oh, I just realized something. Speaking of Kender, no Taz in the past makes it less likely that things go tits up. There's always the chance for the Grey Gem shenanigans, but it seems more likely that it saves Destina like last time. This must be the time when Bakaris strikes. I know I call him a bitch ass, but that's precisely why. He has so much shit on everyone, he can't help himself. If he can't get to Tanis, maybe he tries to set up Caramon. No idea how he accomplishes that. Through Bracelet, maybe? Maybe he just figures out a way to get to Tanis. Now for my final thoughts. Great section of the book. Things finally got to the point where the story is moving at a nice pace. I want to keep reading, and not just because I need to in order to finish this podcast. I just genuinely want to know what happens. I also want to see if they drop any Easter eggs for the Humamagia stories coming next year. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have a ton of articles this month and this podcast. Not much in the social media front recently, but I did put that on my Gamer Resolutions article that I wrote yesterday. So hopefully I will actually follow through with that now that it is a resolution that I have to hold true to. I'll be back at some point before break. We have until the 5th, so I got like 4 or 5 more days. I already started reading and taking notes for the next section for episode 4, so hopefully that'll be up, like I say, before I go back on the 6th. Then I'd like to get this done as early as possible in January, because I do have Frankenstein on the schedule for January, so I want to get that one up and running so I can get back on schedule and actually read the Dragon Republic, which I just picked up at the bookstore for February, and then March and then April. You know how the calendar goes. You can take a look at the show notes. Thanks for listening. Bye, guys.